Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems, so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? March has never changed anything.
How you doing? For those who don't know me, my name is Eric Autry. I just want to discuss the topic of Susunomics. Just a brief overview. The idea and concept is a cooperative economic concept. I have this book right here, Susu and Susunomics by Paul Alfred Barton. It's a good book to get on the subject. This particular form of cooperative economics has a history in Western Africa. The word Susu has many different meanings in different African dialects. One of the ones is the dialect of Ashanti Tree. The word or the root word Su, meaning water, has multiple different variables. You can use the word insu, asu, or just simply the word su, or you can add su su, which means big water or big pool or just simply pool. So you can kind of see where the thought process and the concept of the word itself comes into play as far as the cooperation of economics and people bringing their money together in sort of like a pool. But we don't even have to use the term money. We can use the word resources because traditionally the exchange of labor was the currency at hand at the time we're discussing. We're discussing more like the 13th century and on into the 19th century, right before colonialism kind of, I guess, took hold of the entire economy and and infuse capitalism. But basically, the concept is something that has many different aspects in societies all over the world. The Koreans, I believe they call their version the Kai. The Senegalese use the word Tantan, but these concepts or these ideas are basically the same thing, where multiple people put their resources together and sort of have a group economy that they use to flourish their resources and spread their resources among the population in sort of an even disbursement type of way, whereas to contribute would be more to loan your labor to the group, and the concept is to ultimately get something back from the group. So this is something that's very ancient, this idea. It's not something new. It's something that has been studied for ages. I'm not actually bringing up anything new. I'm just discussing it in a, I guess, more modern term. So Susunomics is, I guess you can say, an informal type of title for what we're going to be discussing. I guess I want to start off with, what is a susu? What is a susu? Well, basically a susu is two or more people coming together on a scheduled basis, I should say, and everybody in this group, or each individual in this group, or each entity in this group, would be putting up a certain allotment of resources, or we can just say money for the time being, in a scheduled way to receive the lump sum of the entire account or pot or pool at a certain time and period. And this particular arrangement goes around in a circle or over a period of time to where each individual or entity receives the entire pot. So let's say person A, B, and C each put up $10, that's an ugly 10, every Friday. And that would equal a grand total of $30. So every Friday, A, B, and C would put up $10. And every Friday, one person out of that group would get $30. So let's just say January, this is hypothetical speaking, January 7th, the first Friday, person A would get $30. And then let's say the next January 14th, person B would get $30. And then 7 days after that would be the, oh my God, the 21st, person C would get $30. And that is a basic susu. Everybody gets $30 every Friday, but each person puts up $10 every Friday. I guess the first question people like to ask is, well, why would I do that? Why can't I just put the money into my own account and save my own money? Well, you can do that. Everybody should do that. That's actually something that I think is a basic idea of economics, putting money aside, putting resources aside for a later date, because you will live to see tomorrow. Or presumably you're going to live to see tomorrow, so you should save. Well, this is a form of group saving. If you live in a community, which most people do, most people don't live in isolation, you want to save with the group as well. You want to have resources for the group to have access to. This idea is very basic in terms of cooperative economics. It is the fundamental savings and loan club. It is the fundamental loan lenders association. It is something that I believe in wholeheartedly. I do this. This is a daily thing for me. I am in a susu in multiple ways with my family, and I'm in a susu with family and friends. And it's a basic concept that starts from this. Now, it can get more complicated than that. This is not something that stops at just $30. This is something that goes into millions of dollars if you know how to manage that type of, I guess you could say, account or that type of money, which is very possible if you just understand math, addition and subtraction. So that's just the beginning. I just wanted to give you a brief overview of the idea of the SUSU and to introduce you to this piece of literature. I guess I can bring it a little closer. SUSU, SUSUnomics by Paul Barton. You should check that out. And if you have any ideas or anything like that, please reach out to me. My name is Eric Autry again. Thanks for watching, and see you in the comments. How you doing? My name is Eric Autry. Today I want to speak about preventing theft in a SUSU. But you know, before I start, I want to make a correction. Earlier I said that the word SUSU means in Ashanti tree, that the word SUSU means pool. Actually, the word SUSU means small in Ashanti tree. And to be honest with you, I'm not too sure if the word SUSU is a word originally from the dialect of Ashanti tree, because the word small in Ashanti tree is Ketwa. So for SUSU to be small, it's kind of hard to connect, make the dots connect. But regardless, it's commonly known that the word SUSU in Ashanti tree or in Ghana is to mean small, and that comes from the idea that you're putting small portions to get a larger amount back. But anyway, my apologies for that, and just wanted to make that correction. So back to what I was saying. Today I want to discuss preventing theft in a SUSU. So how do you prevent theft in a SUSU? How to prevent theft? Well, the first thing that you have to actually understand is the person collecting the resources or the funds or the money is usually called a banker or somebody may call them a counter or collector. There's a bunch of different names, but most often the word banker is used, and that is the first person that must have some integrity, because that is the person collecting all of the funds and the money and the amounts. So that person needs to have the most trust, and everybody needs to trust that person because they are the one collecting everybody's money, and they're going to be holding it until everybody's turn to get their payout or their hand or their draw. Some people in Jamaica call this concept of SUSU, they call it the partner draw. Anyway, so your banker or the person holding the money, sometimes this person can be called an administrator. Regardless, like I said, that's the first person. To have some integrity to, you know, not be a thief. So I think I want to go into four basic concepts that help to prevent theft, because ultimately you can't stop anybody from wanting to steal. And this is, of course, a part of dealing with money. You know, that's actually the second question you get. Like after somebody asks me what is a SUSU, the next question after I explain to them what a SUSU is, they want to know, well, what if somebody takes all the money? What then? Well, here are some things that can kind of put a bit of a, I guess you can say, preventative effort towards the idea of somebody taking all the money. So here's four things. First, we want to start with familiarity. I don't even know if I spelled that right, but you know what I mean. Familiarity. And next, withholds. Familiarity withholds. The next one is penalization. And finally, accountability. You can tell I'm not a spelling bee champ. But there you go. Familiarity with holes, penalization, and accountability. I'm just going to go through these four real quick. I don't want to take too much time. Familiarity. Basically, you don't want to open or start or be involved in a susu where you don't actually know anybody in the susu. Traditionally, susus were created among small villages, small communities, small groups of people who all knew each other and all relied on each other. So it would start off with close families, cousins, cousins, aunts, uncles, anybody who grew up together, friends from school. So familiarity. So you wanna deal with people you know. I would say most often you wanna deal with family members, parents, children, like I said, cousins. Then maybe people from school. Classmates you went to high school with, college with, and then coworkers. Coworkers are always good people, familiar. These are people you're going to see often. So you want to stick with that core group of people that you know you're going to be dealing with. That way you don't have to worry about, you know, if something happens, you don't even know the person that something happened with. Next is withholds. Withholds is basically when the susu goes around, you want to start off not giving the entire sum to the earlier payouts, the earlier lump sums that are distributed out. They may not want to get the whole $30. They may want to get, you know, $27. So that way there's incentive to stay in so you can get the rest of your money. That may not sound like a lot of incentive now, but when you raise the stakes and have larger amounts, you start to get into hundreds of dollars, maybe 200, 300 of dollars, thousands of dollars, who knows, whatever scale you're dealing with, then somebody may not want to take all of the money and not come back because they want to get the rest. That can help to keep the group kind of intact so that they know that there's a reason to stay inside of the susu, because there's money to be gotten towards the end. Penalization. When people are late on their contributions or deposits, there needs to be some type of penalty so that they know, well, you don't. First of all, you don't want to be late. Second off, you don't want to have gotten, or you don't want somebody in the group to have gotten their lump sum and they don't recontribute, like they gotten their money and they basically left and haven't contributed anymore. That's stealing. So you want to make sure that there's some type of retribution for not being on time and not contributing in a timely manner. And that can come from, you know, the withholds, meaning the amount of money that's held back may not be redistributed to the person that was late. So that they know, hey, since you were late, we're going to hold on to this amount of money that you didn't get in your first, in your payout from the beginning. That way, they will at least understand that, you know, next time I won't be late, or I should actually be on time with this, so make sure that everybody else's payout is given to them at the amount that they deserve. This also helps to make sure, ensure that the people who are in the later spots or the later payouts or later dates will have the amount that they deserve. And accountability. Accountability, very simple. Keep charts. Write it down. Make sure you know the date that everybody's supposed to get paid. And this is stuff for the banker to be doing, or the collector, administrator, whatever you want to call that person. Keep a chart. Make sure everybody has access to the chart. Make sure everybody has access to the information about what's going on, and they know when their time is coming up. They know when they're supposed to be given their pay and things like that. And accountability is keeping up with all of this stuff. Everybody who's in there, all of the withholds, all of the infractions, and making sure that everything is running smooth. And that can help to prevent theft. Like I said, you can't stop somebody from wanting to steal, but you can definitely at least cut off a bit of the willingness for somebody to want to steal, and cut off the, or I guess you could say, absorb some of the brunt of loss if somebody steals. Because if somebody actually does steal, you may actually have some money left over. They can take everything. So, preventing theft, familiarity with holes, penalization, and accountability. And that's it for now. If you have anything you want to talk about, just reach out to me in the comments. Again, my name is Eric Autry, and thanks for watching.
And we're going to see if we can get him on here, Eric Autry. Today's podcast is titled Suzu, spelled S-U-S-U, Suzunomics in Social Finance. And Suzu, basically, Suzu is social finance. All right, it is a way. I would say probably, in my opinion, the best form of credit. They're not looking at a credit score. They're looking at your social capital. You know, do people trust you? How do you get along, you know, together, that type of thing. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it's social economics. And I rather, in one way, it could be easier to get it, whatever you need, funded through some type of SUSE than a bank. However, if you mess up within that SUSE, you're done on that end. Let's see, waiting for somebody to come up and do some work here today. But in any event, and there are different forms of SUSE. Now, some people have what they call a family bank. Only family members related by blood can get in on that. I knew a family where it was a brother, uncle type thing, and he worked all the time and didn't. If people in his family, blood relatives, needed down payment for a house, down payment for a car, or a loan for a car, or whatever, they go to this particular uncle / brother. Amish do it all the time. There are different ways you can do it. You can do it through each SUSE can have a different business model. And what we're talking about, we're actually going to be implementing here on It's My House. Offline. I mean, you got time banks, labor-based ZUZUs, cash contribution, material resources, depending on what kind of material you need, expertise, land, financial resources. These are the different type of ways you can put together one, and then people within the group can, you know, get together and decide what specific business model they're going to use. Now, I got somebody that just pulled in my driveway because we got to clear out a room so we can rent it out. So I'm going to play Suzunomics, the intro, and then we'll be back. 619-768-2945 if you have any comments or questions on Suzunomics and social finance.
Hey, Doyle. For those who don't know me, my name is Eric Autry. I just want to discuss the topic of Suzunomics. Just a brief overview. The idea and concept is a cooperative economic concept. I have this book right here, Susu and Susunomics by Paul Alfred Barton. It's a good book to get on the subject. This particular form of cooperative economics has a history in Western Africa. The word Susu has many different meanings in different African dialects. One of the ones is the dialect of Ashanti Tree. The word or the root word su, meaning water, has multiple different variables. You can use the word insu, asu, or just simply the word su, or you can add su su, which means big water or big pool or just simply pool. So you can kind of see where the thought process and the concept of the word itself comes into play as far as the cooperation of economics and people bringing their money together in sort of like a pool. But we don't even have to use the term money. We can use the word resources because traditionally the exchange of labor was the currency at hand at the time we're discussing. We're discussing more like the 13th century and on into the 19th century, right before colonialism kind of, I guess, took hold of the entire economy and infused capitalism. But basically, the concept is something that has many different aspects in societies all over the world. The Koreans, I believe they call their version the Kai. The Senegalese use the word tantine, but these concepts or these ideas are basically the same thing, where multiple people put their resources together and sort of have a group economy that they use to flourish their resources and spread their resources among the population in sort of an even disbursement type of way, whereas to contribute would be more to loan your labor to the group, and the concept is to ultimately get something back from the group. So this is something that's very ancient, this idea. It's not something new. It's something that has been studied for ages. I'm not actually bringing up anything new. I'm just discussing it in a, I guess, more modern term. So Susunomics is, I guess you can say, an informal type of title for what we're going to be discussing. I guess I want to start off with, what is a susu? What is a susu? Well, basically a susu is two or more people coming together on a scheduled basis, I should say, and everybody in this group, or each individual in this group, or each entity in this group, would be putting up a certain allotment of resources, or we can just say money for the time being, in a scheduled way to receive the lump sum of the entire account or pot or pool at a certain time and period. And this particular arrangement goes around in a circle or over a period of time to where each individual or entity receives the entire pot. So let's say person A, B, and C each put up $10, that's an ugly 10, every Friday. And that would equal a grand total of $30. So every Friday, A, B, and C would put up $10, and every Friday, one person out of that group would get $30. So let's just say January, this is hypothetical speaking, January 7th, the first Friday, person A would get $30. And then let's say the next January 14th, person B would get $30, and then 7 days after that would be the, oh my God, the 21st, person C would get $30. And that is a basic susu. Everybody gets $30 every Friday, but each person puts up $10 every Friday. I guess the first question people like to ask is, well, why would I do that? Why can't I just put the money into my own account and save my own money? Well, you can do that. Everybody should do that. That's actually something that I think is a basic idea of economics, putting money aside, putting resources aside for a later date, because you will live to see tomorrow. Or presumably you're going to live to see tomorrow, so you should save. Well, this is a form of group saving. If you live in a community, which most people do, most people don't live in isolation, you want to save with the group as well. You want to have resources for the group to have access to. This idea is very basic in terms of cooperative economics. It is the fundamental savings and loan club. It is the fundamental loan lenders association. It is something that I believe in wholeheartedly. I do this. This is a daily thing for me. I am in a SUSU in multiple ways with my family, and I'm in a SUSU with family and friends. And it's a basic concept that starts from this. Now, it can get more complicated than that. This is not something that stops at just $30. This is something that goes into millions of dollars if you know how to manage that type of, I guess you could say, account or that type of money, which is very possible if you just understand math, addition and subtraction. So that's just the beginning. I just wanted to give you a brief overview of the idea of the SUSU and to introduce you to this piece of literature. I guess I can bring it a little closer. SUSUnomics by Paul Barton. You should check that out. And if you have any ideas or anything like that, please reach out to me. My name is Eric Autry again. Thanks for watching, and see you in the comments.
Okay, well, that's basic. We're forming about five or six Zuzus offline, and basically based on what he just said. It's like, say, it's not a new concept at all. And I'm not going to play it again, but earlier we played also another audio on SUSU theft protection. The ones I'm going to be involved in, now he didn't mention it on his, because there's many ways to do it, but our SUSU banker or collector or treasurer, they'll be bonded and insured. All right, let's go to the phone lines here. If you got any questions or comments on SUSU economics, or SUSU's economics, excuse me. 314, Mike is open.
Yeah, LA, what's going on, man? You putting somebody out on the street?
No. No, clearing out a room so I can rent it out.
Oh. Well, yeah, the topic of the show, those are alternative ways in order to get things done.
And yeah, people were doing it way before government started printing legal tender, what we call money or cash. So it's ancient finance, I'll call it. I'll put it that way.
Well, yeah, you see the same thing, too. I was reading an article about school lunch.
Uh-huh.
Where a cafeteria worker wouldn't give a child lunch because his mama hadn't paid the bills. And I've also read stories where a child brought their lunch in a brown paper bag, they were threatened with suspension. So,
now, in the case of that mother, everybody's got their own policy. But, they could, in my opinion, okay, well, if you're short on cash and don't have it, How about, you know, volunteering to make lunches, do the dishes, whatever?
Yeah,
work
that's
that
a good. That's a good thing. But people don't like that. People believe that folks need to get stuff for nothing. You know, you have had the same question raised on those who receive government assistance need to go out in the community. They need to work.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, well, that's what you just got through describing. They need. What's wrong with working if you're going to be on government assistance?
Not too sure. I mean,
so here in this case with the SUSU, you got people that's going to lend money for whatever it is that you need to have done. Well, should you not pay it back? If you're going to get on government, you're going to be on government.
As he mentioned earlier, there should be penalties. Like if you got five people, and you get. It could be a common goal to raise money or get a house or build a house or whatever. But if one person gets, let's say person number three gets in there, I mean, they're putting in, let's say, $100 a week. And then one person gets their pot, but then they drop out. So all that's got to be discussed.
Well, yeah. So you got people that have these attitudes that you need to have something basically for nothing, and they want the federal government on a large scale, state on a smaller scale, and local minuscule to pay for it. And I don't know where that type of culture. Then you're gonna have people gonna say, "Well, there's corporate welfare." There ain't no corporate welfare. No corporations take advantage of tax deductions, just like the average taxpayer took advantage of tax deductions. You know, at one point in time, you could allow the right off against your gross income. At one point in time, your sales tax. And I knew people, I did myself early on. I would save up all my sales tax receipts, add them up, and they were always come out greater than what was allowed. You had people that can write off their work clothes, the cost of buying them, washing it, and so on against their gross income because they're clothes that you don't wear in your normal thing. So, yes, nothing wrong with these methods as long as you pay back and not try to hard steal, rob, and connive like you seen the guy talking about starting at school. You notice he's being watched. That money's just sitting there. I wonder why come PayPal have him confiscated. But hey, that money's got to go back to people. Yeah, I would think, you?
Now, if you're talking about Johnson Umar, I thought he found a building somewhere in Delaware. Now, I haven't followed him in a long time, but that's what I thought. I don't know.
Delaware, like up in the Northeast?
Yeah, yeah. Up by Maryland and by Pennsylvania.
I wonder how many black folks stay up in Delaware, does it?
They got some black kids.
And here's another thing. Why would you, if you're going to have a school... Now, this, and I'm just asking, you know, they do what they want to do. But you got people that's donating to that coming from all over the place. Detroit, California, I guess Texas. And the school's going to be in Delaware. Well, what is it doing your kids any good?
There's a lot of backseat drivers in there on this stuff. Let me jump into it. It appears like he was, you know, trying to do everything himself. I don't know. But with the amount of people that donated, I would have selected, come up with something where you have a lot of the people that donated money, and some people donated, I'm sure, some larger sums. Have them look for locations in their neck of the woods. They can cover a lot more ground than he can. Number two, because you're right, he's got people that's donated money from all over the planet. What about the idea of a satellite school? Satellite schools. I don't know, there's so many ways you can go with it, but.
Then here's the case, too. Who's going to maintain this building?
That's the big question, because once you get it, you know, and let's say you spent most of this money to get it, which I don't know, maintenance. The bigger the campus, maintenance is, you know, you got to pay people and think the materials cost. I mean, I don't know.
What about the school lunches? This one case that was in the news.
Because you got to buy food.
Up in, I forget where that was. That school lunch program, reportedly in the story, is over $500,000 a year.
Hmm.
So who in the heck's going to pay for that?
I don't know.
And so you're going to lock all these people down for the rest of their lives, donating to that venture. And I guess he becomes the head schoolmaster and draws a salary. You see how silly this stuff really is when you lay it out on the table?
Here's how I'm looking. I'm sure he had a good intentions when he started this, but I think he didn't think everything through. His thing, he's a school psychologist or something like that. That's his lane. But, you know, like a lot of things, matter of fact, he should have you on the committee.
I ain't gonna be on that, buddy.
Well, what I'm saying is, somebody that thinks like you. All right. In other words, maintenance. You know, have you thought how much maintenance? I mean, how much is it going to cost per month or yearly in maintenance? You know,
and
what
really,
kind of
what he's doing is nothing new. You don't have people come along for a long time that starting these schools based on a cultural. Curriculum, African centered.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to make sure black kids know their history, know thyself, Sankofa, ancient Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
But those people end up, and you always notice, and I don't know about him, you always notice that they have kids too.
Right.
But at some point in time, that school closed and their kids go on to the TWIs, the traditional white institutions. But what they've done, they've collected money off of black folks under the pretense of having schools that's going to address another thing that I have issues with about blacks don't know their history.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take the money and use it to send their kids to school, to good schools. And I can name instances of that. In St. Louis,
right,
and elsewhere. So the old tactic about playing on people's ill-advised and ill-informed emotions is nothing new, especially blacks, since we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody that give money apparently the way that it was done, and we say $20 a person. How much money they collect?
I haven't kept up with that in quite a long time. The last I heard was like, $700,000? I don't know.
Well, that's about 30,000, 35,000 people, which is hard to even imagine. You must have been doing some hard work running around.
He's got a pretty good base out there. I mean, plus, he's been on a lot of hype. You know, Breakfast Club, he's been on there a few times. Then he's got a pretty good YouTube following as well.
Well, yeah, people can talk about issues that people have in concern, like police shootings and issues about so-called income inequality. Why? Well, how would you sell income inequality? Are you going to take money from somebody and give it to another? I seen a case where they want to raise minimum wage up to $20. I didn't tell you about it. I went to a Krispy Kreme donuts. I just had a taste for some donuts. I bought 6 donuts. You know how much them donuts cost me? $8.29 with tax.
You bought a brand name donut.
Yeah, but they're paying the people in there minimum wage. It was 2 in there. $8.29 for 6 donuts. Well, who can afford that? If you're talking about kids going to school, a lunch program, and you know how much, reading that story, this one kid that was denied, lunch was $8.
Mm-hmm.
$8 for lunch?
Like school lunch?
Yes.
Now, where was that?
I'll email you the article.
Is that someplace like New York City?
I think it was New Hampshire. Yeah, it was. It was New Hampshire. It said New Hampshire school cafeteria fired for giving food to student who couldn't pay. New Hampshire is a liberal state, a blue state.
They got some strict rules in place. Well, too strict, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'll let you get to some other callers, but I just want to bring that out. And lay it out in a different fashion. You know, you can lay things on the table with top up and bottom down, left and right, but turn it a different way and put top to the side and bottom to the side, right and left to the top and bottom, and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
You usually get a different perspective. And another thing about this, Susu, I've seen some Muslim Somalis raise over $30,000, less than an hour, maybe 45 minutes at a mosque there in St. Louis off of Vandeventer. And I think it was Spring Avenue.
If you got a little small community of people, and it could be something like maybe 50 people,
mm-hmm.
you know, just not a whole lot of people, but it is. I consider 3 or 4 people a community.
And
but,
at the flea market. Them Africans go around and collect money from each other for various reasons. Somebody needs to go back home for a funeral or send a body back. You know, they come here and work and live, but they send their bodies back home. And for various reasons. Somebody wants to start to open up a shop, or open up their little spot, so they collect money amongst the rest of them to help donate to this person so that they can order their merchandise. And eventually, I guess, they pay it back or they put it into the kitty when time comes for them to do so. All right, I see you later.
Okay, Bianchi, have a good weekend. Robin, I want to open up your mic. I want to, Robin, you there?
To help donate to this person so that they can order their merchandise.
Robin?
Yes, I'm here.
I want to activate your millionaire mind. If you were to organize a Susu for the purpose of building tiny houses, how would you organize it? Using the millionaire concept.
Well,
now hold on. Before you answer, while your wheels are turning, you know what? I'm gonna put it this way: what millionaire business model? Because there are time banks. You can exchange labor. You can decide. All right, we're gonna do cash. Materials, somebody brings windows, somebody brings doors, somebody brings drywall, material resources, other financial resources, doesn't have to be, you know, non-cash, land, expertise, that's just 8. And I'm sure there's a lot more we thought about. So anyway, I turn it back over to you using the millionaire concept to form a millionaire Zuzu to build houses.
I need a moment.
Okay, what we'll do then, since you need a moment, which is understandable, and anybody else out there, 619-768-2945. Oh, hold on, I'm trying to get some moment music. Okay.
Thank you.
wait a minute now. Amish village. In the Amish practice, they practice Suzunomics as well.
Mm-hmm. Oregon sunshine. You got to admit, for, you know, going on the middle of December, though, it could be a lot worse. I know a lot of places that are in snow right now. This technically is a singles bungalow. This is one of the smaller ones. This is an 8x8 as opposed to ones like this over here, this over here, that are doubles, you know. In we go. Big enough for two good friends to be able to sit in their chairs in the evening when they're not at the yurt or somewhere else, you know. It encourages you to get out more often, I guess you could say. And of course, the master bedroom upstairs here in the loft. That job was farmed out overseas, you know, and so the employment opportunity ceased. At this point in time, it was like the sand going through the hourglass, you know. It was just a matter of time before we had to step out somewhere else, you know. We found out about Opportunity Village. I believe there was an article in one of the local newspapers about it. And I saw the outlay, the design of the place, and so we thought about checking it out.
If what's expected is you go straight from homeless to, you know, hey, go rent an apartment, that's a leap. That's not a step. You know, I was off and on homeless for 3 years. I was faced with this huge leap. And I mean, you bust your ass.
Eggs are donated, but unfortunately, they're usually broke or outdated, or so you have to be careful.
The smaller you can make the steps for homeless people to get off the streets, the easier it is.
If people are going to go looking for work, they need to be able to have a place where they can have a roof over their head, if at all possible. They need to be able to have a shower facility where they shower and be presentable to go out and work. There are 33, 34 people who live here in the village, and we share a community eating areas, food preparation areas. And in any environment like this, you're going to have a number of different personalities.
We have boxes with our name on it.
Trying.
We have our stuff in the kitchen with our name on it.
It doesn't apply in the laundry room. That is a community area, and everyone uses the laundry, and we don't have storage.
So it's a work in progress, a daily thing that the villagers just kind of have to be able to work within that framework of each other.
And I thought we had some sort of an understanding as to making people not feel alienated from being on those computers.
You know, what's good for one of us is good for all of us. If we all work together towards the same thing, we're all in the same boat here.
I do think everyone's intentions, even if it's not to make themselves better, I believe they want to make this a better place to stay. And not for nothing, if they don't want this to be a better place to stay and they don't want to get better themselves, that should be the two rule breakers. If all you had to do is wake up in the morning, take a shower, work a 10-hour day, you got to come home, put your laundry in. While laundry's working, you could make a really nice dinner. That's not feasible when you're homeless. It's tough. And so, to me, this is a perfect scenario, you know, for people that want to actually, you know, again, use it as a stepping stone to move forward with their life.
The population of homeless are here in our county is, most of them are ours. They are, don't come from other places. We are a county as big as Connecticut. We have to think differently.
Okay, Robin. Any ideas? Need any ideas?
Well,
Rob, you there?
Okay. Informing, in organizing, I think that we always have great success when we answer or fulfill a need or a problem in in whatever local community. You know, so identifying places that are untapped or unserved, and then putting calls to action out and people in those areas. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but let's say you've got five people that are, and it's probably easier to do this stuff offline, but five people that are at a shelter. You know what? That's the amazing thing. Did you ever see the movie 99 Homes?
I think I saw it. Don't you have it posted on your website?
Well, you can go rent it or buy it on, Amazon and YouTube movies.
Yeah.
And I played some clips from it. Matter of fact, let me look it up right now. 99 Homes. Which is based on a true story. Okay, let me. All right, I'm gonna play the scene right now.
I was catching 2-pound bass.
Excuse me.
When I was six
years
old.
Hold up. Hey, you stole some tools from me yesterday during my eviction.
I'm the senior sales manager. What are you talking about, man?
What's the problem? You stole $500.
You're just making up bullshit.
Working my fucking tools.
I didn't steal your fucking tools.
We have a form you can fill out.
I'm not filling
out any form. Just give me my tools.
If you have an issue, we got a form you can fill out.
No, just give me my tools.
It's an inline
standard.
And look for your tools again.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. You don't have a fucking house, right?
What the fuck?
Motherfucker!
God damn it.
Give me my fucking tools back.
Sir, I was trying to intervene.
Sir,
what the fuck are you still doing here anyway?
Huh?
I thought you said...
Lord Almighty, you have evolved. Has Darwin himself come to Orlando, Florida? Well, Bill?
We'll be there on time, Mr. Carver.
Get to it.
All right, yes. All right. All right, come on, Bominos, Freddy, let's go.
Jeff.
Guys, Buena Vista Lakes, here we go.
And you, sir, are you finished? Because I got the cops on speed dial. They can chase you out of town over busted taillights.
I didn't come here to fight.
Well, that's good.
I came here to get my tools that your guys stole.
Don't look like Ace Hardware. I don't deal in
tools. You don't
tools.
Look like
I
Ace Hardware. Your guy stole the tools yesterday. I understand what you do, sir.
Yeah, you do?
I understand what you do. You evicted me yesterday. You kicked me out yesterday.
I didn't kick you out. The bank did. I just represented. Richard Carver.
What?
You've got to be kidding me. When? Yeah, fuck Hazmat. I'll call him myself. 914 Shader Drive, now.
What about via
Alabama? Move it!
Yes, sir. Go.
Mr. Carver, sorry to interrupt your day.
You Miguel?
What?
Do you work? You got tools? You do construction?
Yeah, I do work.
914 Shader Drive. I'll pay $50 cash.
What? Are you kidding me?
$50 shouldn't be a joke to you, son. Are you gonna look into my mother? Fucking shit!
That scene was from the film 99 Homes, based on actual events that took place in Orlando, Florida, but you can see it basically took place all over the United States. The guy that was trying to get his tools was a carpenter. He and his mother and his son got foreclosed on, and the sheriff came and evicted them out of the house. So they took whatever possession they had. He had a pickup truck. And he went to one of these weekly motels, and at this particular weekly motel where they would got into the fisticuffs, were other people who got evicted. And the interesting thing about it is, at this weekly motel where most of the people that were there had been foreclosed on and evicted, there were all kind of skill sets. Now, this guy, like I said, the guy that was trying to get his tools back was a carpenter. So somebody that his mother did hair. One of the women that his mother made friends with was good at babysitting. So you had a whole community of people there, but they just weren't organized. They had the human capital there to actually build their own community. But they didn't see it. So using the millionaire concept, Robin, let's try it again. There's a motel, a weekly motel, full of skilled people. Oh, wait a minute. Let me open up. Oh, this way. Okay, Robin, I got you now.
Yeah, I got knocked off. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is your mind clicking
so,
yet?
Not much. Sorry. Really, but how to go about organizing it is putting out calls to action. So, oh, you said...
Let's take this scene from 99 Homes. Okay, once again, at the scene after this one, they went to a house where this guy had, they already evicted the people, but the people got messed, they got, you know, they got pissed off. I mean, they poo-pooed everywhere. They just messed the place up. So
yeah,
so other people that filed the guy there, the realtor there, were other people that live in there. So you had a cleanup crew that basically cleaned up that whole place. Like I said, one of the primary stars of this movie was a carpenter. So get a carpenter with tools now. So you give me five people. Give me a carpenter. Give me the cleanup people. You know, there are other people who had get somebody. You go out and get windows and doors. All right. You can have somebody. As a matter of fact, that person can get salvage a lot of stuff just on the internet. You have another person that can hang drywall, and then somebody that just could be a gopher. Give me five people. I can build you a house.
So we can get them from the shelters, from Lowe's, Home Depot, the employment
weekly
shelters.
Weekly motels.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how many people. I used a lot of
the day laborers.
Some of these guys, I picked up guys, these guys from out of shelter. These guys got all their tools.
Yep. Yeah.
So, it not to judge them, some people just might. There's all kind of stories in of life would have people. But anyway, so that's what we'll be doing offline. I'll be talking to some of you today about that. We're going to be forming Zuzus, where we're organizing people where we can actually do the work. Now, I'm about to sign off because I got to run some errands here.
Okay.
Pleasant Stephens, is there going to be a Strictly Business tonight for people that want to tune in to learn a lot about business during the PM hours? Pleasant Stephens has a podcast titled Strictly Business. Is on Monday through Friday at 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. And let me get the number. Matter of fact, let me open up. Pleasant, anything you want to put out there today?
Yeah, we're gonna start it here tonight again. Today is Friday, I believe, and we're going to be working on this project that we're working on. But we're going to be airing at 7:30 to 9:30.
Okay, Central Standard Time. The number is 516-387-1512. Once again, 516-387-1512. Let's see. Robin, any announcements? When you're in.
Yeah. For all of you podcasters and people with services and brands that are listening, send in your contact information to L.A. Davis or myself, because I'm going to begin getting a hold of each and every one of you to record commercials that we can all air for each other on our podcast. We should all be airing commercials for each other's shows and services and brands and podcasts. So I'm going to be, you want to get a hold of me, and you can contact, you can reach me through It's My House. Okay. And just send in your email address, and then I will get back with you and begin recording commercials, and then we'll all start airing commercials during our podcast and show and start doing in-house advertising. Okay?
All right. All right.
Sounds good.
So we'll be on Pleasant. We'll be listening to Pleasant Stephens tonight, and then we'll be Sunday. We'll give more information on the Zuzus that we're forming. So on that note, everyone have a good rest of the day and a great week.